This is Cave Scott Allen of Otico.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Hello and welcome to Herding Code. This episode is being recorded January 20, 2017. I'm here at NDC London and I'm talking to Rob Connery. Hello, Rob.
Hello. How are you?
So just a day or two ago, two days ago, I saw your talk. It was fascinating, but I forgot the exact title.
How Complexity Theory Can Save Your Job.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So you actually, in this talk, you did get fired from a job because of not understanding complexity theory.
Yeah, that's what my talk was about. I did get fired from a job because they posed a problem to me that I couldn't solve. I just didn't know how to do it. It was a matching algorithm that I needed to write. And it turned out to be NP-hard that my friend explained to me once. And I was like, oh, that's neat. What does that mean? He's like, well, it means you get fired if you try and do it. And so anyway, I actually dove into it this last year to figure out more about the problem, but also what NP-hard meant. And so, yeah, that was what the talk was about. Just diving into complexity theory and not wasn't so like supposed to be dire, like, oh, if you do this, you'll get fired all the time. But it was more like recognizing the pitfalls, like, oh, if they ask to scale the thing you're doing to a certain level, that could be a bad thing. You know what I'm saying? So give you, for instance, I wrote a query once, and it's one of my favorite queries. I always talk about it. It's in my books, blog posts, whatever. It's called a co-occurrence query. Anyway, it's this query that establishes relationships between like products. Like, so what products were sold together the most? Mm-hmm. And to actually write that query is pretty hard, but you can do it for two products. Like if you wanted to show like this one product was shown the most with this other one or bought the most with this other one, it's actually a reasonable query to do. It doesn't take too long, but if your boss asks you to do then a relationship of three or four, that's going to shut down your system. And it's because it's exponentially hard to do. And if you don't recognize that, then you're going to be in trouble. If you say, sure, I'll do it, then you might be in trouble. So things like that.
So going from like you were showing there's polynomial, there's exponential, there's differentiating those different kind of class.
Yeah, so that's the crazy thing about complexity theory is they throw all these weird terms at it. You know, first it's easy to understand. Like P-time problems are simple, you know, okay. And then, in fact, they say that. There's three buckets, right? There's P, there's X per exponential, and then there's R, which is finite time. And then it goes on from there to infinite and so on, and it gets really strange. But within, like, P is supposed to be polynomial time, and could you name it something a little bit more obtuse, right?
Right.
But what it really is talking about is the scaling complexity. Like, what's the math that goes into defining how the problem you're working on scales? So if you're familiar with big O notation, you hear someone say like, oh, that's order n. I mean, that just means it like scales in a linear way. If you have 10 inputs and it takes a minute, let's say, and then 20 inputs, it'll take 2 minutes. So that's a linear scaling. Linear scaling is 1x, 2x, 5x, 10x. Mm-hmm. You look at that and you go, oh, that's P time. Right. You know that, polynomial. Even if it's squares, it's still polynomial time. But it's stuff like chess. Mm-hmm. When you talk about chess and being literally exponentially difficult or a factorial, right?
So the example you said with chess being like if you went from an 8x8 board to a
10x10,
10x10, it goes...
how much more complex would the game just become? Well, the sun would blow up a couple times, you know, try and figure that out. Yeah, and what was the other thing? So like my co-occurrence query, those nested for loops, you know, that's a factorially complex scaling. And boom, right there, you know, it's exponentially hard. What I'm doing is exponentially hard, and what kind of thing am I trying to do? And you can work it down from there.
So one thing you pointed out in there was that you kind of got a little cocky because you actually did something that was NP hard, but with only two.
Yeah.
With only two, then that's okay. Like it's right. But it just, the scaling is the thing to worry about, right?
Yeah. So one of the things I was trying to point out to the group too is like, here's an NP hard problem is trying to figure out where the entire group, what would be the best place for all of us to go have a pint after the talk, you know? And to make that decision process, to make that optimal for the group is an NP hard problem. But if there's only two of us,
right,
we can do it.
We'll just start with
it. Yeah, so it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to take forever. You just have to know what you're dealing with. And if your inputs are small enough, well, okay. Might be able to work in there, you know? And it's funny because I was talking to somebody later and they said, well, Google's doing XYZ. I'm like, well, they're throwing machines at it. And
yeah.
And concurrent processing and a bunch of other things. You can start to get into solving these really complex problems in a reasonable way.
Speaking of Google, too, you mentioned that Google uses PageRank,
mm-hmm.
right? And so you were talking about PageRank being – well, how does that kind of fit in?
That's my example that I gave for solving the pint selection. Like, okay, so
it's just step all the way back. Based, right?
Yeah, it's authority based. So the idea would be sitting in a room of 20 people. We want to go get a pint of beer. Where do we go? Mm-hmm. And so everybody could look around at each other, or two people could stand up that we all respect, and we let them make mm-hmm. the decision for us. It's the way democratic processes work. We have delegates, mm-hmm. and they can make a choice for us. In the United States, we painfully have the Electoral College. It works that way as well. So the idea is that then they take everybody's input, and then you refine it down, and that's kind of like PageRank in a way. So PageRank bases websites, they make a graph of all the websites, and they link them on an inbound and outbound links. And so based on the link count, then that one site might have, like Hanselman's site, might have way more authority than, say, mine. You know? And so if a keyword shows up in his site, they're going to send it to his blog.
Right.
And so that's an approximation.
Okay.
Or a heuristic, if you will. It's not exact, and it's not going to be optimal, but it usually will solve the problem.
So that was interesting. You talked about that idea of heuristics as like a great one is the traveling salesman problem, mm-hmm. right? So traveling salesman, to actually work that out, to find the provably optimal route is hard, but to approximate it,
yeah.
you can get by.
With traveling salesmen, you can use this heuristic called nearest neighbor. And the idea is if I have to go to, say, 20 cities, I'm starting out in London and I got to go to 20 cities from here. I might look at a list and say, what's the next cheapest cost? Because I'm trying to get to the cheapest mm-hmm. route all the way back to London through all these cities. And so the next cheapest one could be Berlin. I go there. And then from Berlin, I look at the next cheapest one and go there. So that's nearest neighbor. It's a greedy algorithm, and it will get you within 25% on average of the lowest cost. It's not guaranteed. Mm-hmm. But there are actually approximation algorithms that will get you to a guaranteed precision in there. And for some NP-hard routines, you can actually get really close. You know, I don't have them off the top of my head, but the job when I got fired, there was actually an approximation algorithm that probably would have worked. Yeah. And if I would have known it, if I would have known I was dealing with clique or whatever, how you ever say that, you know, I might have been able to save my job and been the hero, but I didn't know, right? I didn't know.
So one other thing you've mentioned during the talk several times, and now there's decisions and optimizations,
mm-hmm.
and recognizing the difference between the two is important.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the things that I had a really difficult time doing was understanding the difference between NP complete, mm-hmm. which is what you hear a lot of, and NP hard. And so the way I've come to understand it is that NP-complete problems are decision problems. It's like one of those things looking in my head going, like exploding with, how am I going to explain this? A decision problem is simply a yes-no. So the way I always explain it to people is if you consider a really long if statement, mm-hmm. like a crazy ifs with ors and ors and nots, just a really long one, and let's say it's got five or six variables in it, like mm-hmm. A, B, C, and D, whatever. And you ask the question, what values of A, B, C, D, and so on will make this thing true? That's a decision problem. And it's a really simple one. It's like looking at a decision tree, and you want to know what values are going to lead to a successful outcome. So it turns out that NP complete, they're all variations of that problem. In fact, that problem has a name, and it's called the Boolean satisfiability problem, or SAT. And if you can reduce the problem that you're working on to SAT, it's NP complete. It's just one of those beautiful synchronous things in math that's really fun to see. But the yes no result is the big deal, mm-hmm. because to be NP complete, you have to be verifiable, like immediately in P time is what they say. So you just look at the truthful outcome of the problem and you say, oh yeah, I'm verified, it's true.
Yeah.
Boom. NP hard problems don't have that. You can't verify an NP hard problem in P time. You can, but it's not a prerequisite.
So whereas with the Boolean statement, I can plug in the answer and say, yes, that works, it checks out.
Right.
But for which is the best bar to go and have a pint, we would have to go to all those.
Yes.
But there's like, you would have to go to them all at the same time. And you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's this interwoven problem.
Right.
Like, interdependent. It's really hard for the human brain to actually think about this stuff. Although I know there's Mensa geniuses out there who could probably see things five dimensionally or something, could do it. But to actually get an optimization problem down and right is it's nearly impossible.
Okay, so the background to this is you recently wrote a book, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so your book, The Imposter's Handbook, is kind of going over a lot of these things that you kind of wish you'd known, right?
They teach this stuff in school, and for people that have degrees in computer science, they learn this stuff. And I don't, so I didn't. But, now it's fun because now when I talk to people, I feel a little bit better. Like, I feel like, okay, I'm on some footing here. They just dropped a reference to something, and I actually understand what it is. But then at the same time, I tend to spout off and like, oh, that's the blah, 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 and I sound like that person. So
you've the book covers a lot more than just complexity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's 100, 400 pages? It's a lot of pages.
Gosh, it's up to 700.
700,
now.
Nice.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
Yeah, no. Well, the PDF, it depends what font size I use.
Oh, okay. All right. And then you told me that you are also working on recording an audiobook version mm-hmm. for parts of it.
I started to do an audiobook for all of it, but then there's a lot of code in there. And I thought, well, if I could describe the code, it might work. And it does not work. It sounds really tedious. So I'm going to do combination video and audio package.
Mm-hmm.
And, there's about five or six audio chapters in there that'll work. And then the rest I'm going to do just code walkthroughs and, stuff like that.
Okay. And so, there's complexity theory, there's mm-hmm. algorithms, there's all kinds of stuff in there.
Yeah, it's all interwoven. That's the fun thing is the chapters build on themselves. So there's one chapter where you start out with the hard stuff. Mm-hmm. You start out with the complexity theory, and then you go straight into lambda calculus and algorithms. But the fun thing is as you keep reading, you start to see how things link, mm-hmm. together. For instance, in the computer, I have a computer history or computational history chapter where you talk about Turing and Babbage and all these things, and it's really fascinating to see. But then you go into the lambda calculus and you see what Alonzo Church was doing. And like, oh, wait, that's kind of what Turing was saying, too. And you start to see these similarities, and you realize, oh, my God, this is the foundation of programming. And it just blows your mind open. And you're like, lambda calculus is radical,
So. Okay, how would you describe, getting a little deeper into lambda calculus?
For gosh sakes. one of the things, the reason I got into lambda calculus is I watched a talk where Jim Wyrick did the Y Combinator on stage. And the Y Combinator is basically a pure functional for loop, is the best way to think of it. Mm-hmm. It's a recursion that calls a function based on a limiter. So, and it's just a pure function form. It's really bizarre to see how you can actually do this. But these little lambdas, so in C sharp, what a lambda mm-hmm. Would look like. Same with JavaScript. It's just an anonymous function is one way to think of it. You can actually build these anonymous functions to call each other in this strange way. And so I in the book, I show how to do lambda, do Y Combinator using ES6.
Mm-hmm.
And it works wonderfully. And it's so funny to actually use this chained monstrosity to loop over and execute anything in a loop. And it's so fun. So I actually do a lambda for Fibonacci, and then I do a lambda for Y Combinator in pure functions. There's no numbers in here.
Okay.
And then it loops over it, and then boom, you can see the result, which is another function that represents 55.
Awesome.
I know, it's crazy.
Well, we should probably wrap up there.
Okay, sure.
So mostly because my batteries are dying.
Yeah, no problem.
But for people that want to know more, definitely the Imposter's Handbook.
Yeah.
So it's bigmachine.io.
Bigmachine.io.
Awesome.
Yes, thanks, John.
All right, thank you.
Yep.